أعزائي المستمعين، أهلا بكم حلقة من بودكاست مطب العشرين. معاكم في حلقة النهاردة محمد بيومي، وحلقة النهاردة أخش في موضوع طويل عشان ما أطولش عليكم. في ناس كتير طلبت مني نعمل محتوى متعلق بالصحة وإزاي تخلي بالك من صحتك وحاجات زي الاستدامة. إن شاء الله يعني ربنا يديكم طول العمر، ولو اداكم طول العمر إزاي تخلي بالك من صحتك على المدى الطويل. أي حد لما بيطلب مني موضوع جد زي حصل قبل كده، زي موضوع جلد الذات، انا مش هفتي في حاجه زي كده. يعني انا بالكتير قوي ممكن اقول خبرتي في الموضوع، بس مش هفتي في موضوع زي ده. ففي العادي بنجيب ضيف، لكن في الموضوع الاستدامه والصحه على المدى الطويل بشكل عام، انا ما لقيتش ضيف قدامي اعرفه بيتكلم عربي على طول. ففكرت اعمل تجربه غريبه شويه، انا وهي هنا في جامعه اوكسفورد، هجيب حد خبير في الموضوع بس ما بيتكلمش عربي، بيتكلم انجليزي. فدي تجربه يعني ممكن تبقى حلوه وممكن ما اكررهاش تاني، هنشوف. فعايز اسمع رايكم طبعا على اخر الحلقه دي، كانت تجربه عامله ازاي او نحسنها ازاي ولا ما نكررهاش تاني. فهو ده مقدمه حلقه النهارده. وسريعا قبل ما انقل واتكلم انجليزي مع الضيف، هقول لكم نبذه عنه بالعربي. الضيف الحلقه النهارده اسمه سات، هو درس طب في جامعه اوكسفورد، وبعد كده درس ماشين ليرنينج في جامعه لندن، وشغله كله متعلق بمجال ازاي تستخدم الذكاء الاصطناعي في الامور الطبيه، ازاي اللي هو نعرف نشخص المريض، ازاي نديله دواء، وازاي الادوات والداتا والحاجات المتعلقه بالذكاء الاصطناعي ده بتساعدنا في كده. وهو ده الشخص اللي انا نفسي كمحمد لما بيكون عندي سؤال متعلق بالصحه بشكل عام بروح له، انا بروح اساله. فانا كان فكرت في حاجه من الاثنين، الاول اخد اسئله منكم وبعد كده اتكلم معاه واعمل انا حلقه بكلمكم بالعربي اقول لكم فلان الفلاني قال لي كذا، او قلت اجيبه هو يتكلم في الحلقه بالانجليزي وبعد كده نبقى نحلل الموضوع بعدها. فانا قررت اجرب التاني، بس برضو زي ما قلت عايز اسمع رايكم بدون رغي كتير. والضيف قاعد مستني في الويتنج روم يخش الحلقه، فانا هنقل دلوقتي على الانجليزي واتكلم معاه واساله الاسئله اللي متعلقه بالصحه اتكلمنا عنها، وزي ما قلت عايز اسمع رايكم في الموضوع ان شاء الله. Hello Seth, how are you?
Hey Mohammed, what's going on?
Not much. I just had breakfast.
What did you have?
I can't tell you on this podcast. It's a bit of a secret.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you know this, but I try to be as private as possible in like settings like this.
Really? Let me. Can I have a guess as to what you ate for your breakfast?
No. Don't guess. do you want to share what you had for breakfast?
What did I have for breakfast today? I think I had two bananas, and maybe some chicken, but I actually can't remember whether I had chicken or not. I feel like a lot of my breakfast.
What do you mean you can't remember?
I think my breakfasts are quite varied, and I genuinely don't remember what I had this morning, because it could have been what I had yesterday, which was like banana muesli, I think, or it could have been like chicken. What else? I've been having a lot of veg at the moment. My dad has this garden. He regularly brings me these gifts of vegetables. And that's because I just have so much of it. That's slowly making its way into my breakfast as well. So
he just like drops you like a random basket of carrots or tomatoes. And he's like, Seth, have this.
Yeah, he does. Raspberries as well.
Wow. Fancy. Well, I love how I was going to talk to you today about how to optimize health. And the intro is like, I can't even remember what I had for breakfast. Clearly, that's, you have it all sorted out. Just, I introduced you in Arabic very briefly. And I said that you studied medicine in Oxford and then did machine learning in Imperial in London. Would that be a fair characterization of your qualifications as the person who gives me medical and health advice?
Yeah, I suppose it would be. But yeah, I always qualify whenever I give you advice, Mohammed, that I'm not a medically trained professional just yet.
So. Okay, not yet. Well, very close.
Yeah, like 3 months away. So yeah, I know where to, I know what to Google, and I know what to, yeah, I know when to call some things out as being completely wrong.
Yeah, I've heard that statement quite a bit. So basically, I just wanted to like obviously we've talked about these things a lot because I come to you for advice very often on these topics, but I wanted to like summarize all of the stuff that I've learned from you over the years, and particularly a lot of the stuff that I thought makes sense and then you told me this is complete nonsense. So the basic idea that most people who probably listen to this podcast care to some extent about their health. Some people might be specialists. I don't know, you're a like a marathon runner or something, then you have like very specific things to keep in mind. But just for the average person who just like wants to take basic care of their health and to, well, have some interest in longevity, they don't want to, like, you know, have back problems when they're 20 already and stuff like that. There are a lot of like common principles that I've read about. And some of them you're like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. And some of you were like, this is complete nonsense. So just wanted to go over a few of these basic things. And one of them was that I've read once that basic strength or like weightlifting training is extremely important for your long-term health. Like that the fact that you just like very occasionally, maybe like once or twice a week, just go to the gym, lift weights to some extent, is like very strongly correlated. There's a lot of evidence that supports this really helps you, especially as you get older. Well, throughout your life generally, but also especially as you get older, to maintain good health and a good physique. And then this is one of the ones where you told me, yes, this is correct, which is a rare occasion.
Yeah, this is actually one that is correct. And I think it's one that like a lot of people up until recently didn't have a full appreciation of. So I would say even when I began my training, it was something that maybe we realized was a good thing to do, but not imperative for people to do, especially as they get older. So especially for women, when you get older, one of the things that tends to happen after you have the menopause is that your bones tend to become a lot more porous. They become a lot weaker. And one of the things that weight training does is it kind of increases your bone density. So for women, as you grow older, that doing kind of strength training is really, really important. But this is not just the case for women as well. Doing weight training as you get older is really important. But yeah, like I was saying, I think up until the last few years, primarily when people think about what exercise they should be doing, they're like, oh yeah, like my 5 times a week, half an hour of running, like that'll sort me. I don't never need to like do push-ups, go to the gym. But yeah, like you said, this is, I think, something that is definitely not true anymore. And weight training is something that's super, super important. And it doesn't need to be like you're going to the gym and lifting like huge heavy weights. Like, of course, I'm sure you do, Mohammed, like every day.
Of course. Like, no, so just to like zoom on that, you said that even if you go for a run, like 4 or 5 times a week for half an hour, that's like not enough to get the same benefits you would get from like occasional, or very light weight training, like once or twice a week, especially in the long term.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And like I said, especially as you get older, it's something that becomes progressively more important as you do decondition, and having that kind of that reserve that comes through weight training is super important. And especially it's also the case when you're younger as well, doing weight training is definitely something that can improve your like overall fitness.
Okay. One other thing that I don't know much about. Does actually lifting ridiculously heavy weights, let's say if I go into powerlifting, does that actually help me, harm me in the long run as well with like loads of issues?
Oh, is this something you're planning on doing?
Maybe. Like,
yeah, this is something that I don't have probably a really well thought out answer for. I suppose the main benefit that comes from lifting weights is definitely from that kind of like 20% of weightlifting that you might want to do. So nothing that's kind of like not lifting crazy weights, like
backbreaking,
like where you have some kind of like, you need to have some kind of like girdle or strap that prevents your intestines from like popping out of your through your like abs, which I know some people need to do. Yeah, I just think that main benefit comes from doing kind of regular and not necessarily super frequent like weight training exercise. Yeah, and like I said, that can be body weight exercises at home, and gym is also absolutely fine if you want to go to the gym and do some basic exercises.
Okay, so the second area that's obviously very important for health, which everyone intuitively knows, is sleep. And I had actually like heard over one of the people we both know, Christoph, has been claiming that he read a bunch of studies that even just like sleep like 4 or 5 hours, just like perfectly fine in the long run. And this is one of the things when I researched it and then I asked you about it, you're like, no, this is complete nonsense. Like sleep is like actually quite important. You shouldn't sleep 5 hours a day. And it's like a very basic thing, but I just like wanted, again, to, for the sake of completeness at least, just bring it up as well.
Yeah, so sleep is probably another one of these habits that people have really, really come to appreciate the importance of recently. So I think from my own anecdotal experiences, sleep is probably the most important thing that I can do for my own well-being and for my own productivity. So I could probably give you a very, very decent approximation of what my output and well-being will be for a day based upon the amount that I slept the night before. So
and specifically when you think about like long-term health, I assume if you have poor sleep, it just compounds and gets worse and worse, or is that like, there's not much research into this?
Yeah, so basically like you have increased risk of dementia if you don't sleep. It's one of the contributing factors for that. And like, I think that's both from like a direct impact where not sleeping is not great for your brain neurochemistry, but it also not sleeping has a bunch of other effects. If you think about like what happens when you don't sleep, like I at least find that I don't do as much exercise. My diet is a lot poorer. Lack of sleep is definitely something that's linked to appetite. And so you eat worse food. And so you actually think all of these other negative impacts that come from not sleeping will also harm your long-term health.
On the topic of sleep, slight tangent is, very often I would hear something from someone and I'm like, oh my God, like Brian Johnson like gave me the secret. And it's like often a very like well-known fact. So like, yeah, so Brian Johnson, like you can look the guy up. He like is a little bit out of his mind and he's very interested in longevity and long-term health. And one thing I've heard him talk about before is he believes sleep is like super important because especially like his willpower is very well if he sleeps well. But one of the actionable things he said that I haven't heard before, which according to you is actually quite a well-known fact, is eating late gives you poor sleep quality. So if you eat very close to your bedtime, you typically don't sleep as well. So Brian literally eats once a day in the morning, which is a bit extreme. But at the very least, if I'm sleeping at midnight, maybe 6 o'clock is like a decent cutoff, maybe 8 o'clock. Definitely don't eat like 15 minutes before you go to bed. So this is one of the things where you were just like, Mohammed, this is like a very basic, well-known fact. Like this is not a Brian Johnson hack.
Yeah. This is also quite a recent thing that Mohammed and I have spoken about. We were actually in a supermarket yesterday and we had this like, I don't know, mini argument in the supermarket. Mohammed's like, I want to have this whole platter of chicken. I was like, yeah, it looks quite nice, but it is also like 9:30 PM. So by the time it's ready, it'll be like 10:15. Like it's too close to like when I'm going to be going to sleep. So yeah, I'd just rather not. So yeah, eating late is one of these things that definitely reduces the quality of your sleep. So kind of alongside some other things as well, like drinking alcohol is another thing that can really, really harm the quality of your sleep and make it harder to go to sleep. So like for me personally, I think sometimes I do eat later than I would like to. I think that that's because I often find that I probably don't prioritize eating dinner as much as I should. So I'll get in after a day of work. Like at the moment, I've just been writing up a dissertation, for example, and like the time that I usually am in a position to eat dinner, it's like between 8 and 9. And that's really kind of like pushing it for me as to like when I should be having dinner. So preferably I would like to have dinner at 7. I find that it kind of helps my sleep and my whole kind of wind down routine if I eat earlier.
Yeah. And I assume like there's loads of like basic stuff about sleep, like don't hold your phones and devices close your bedtime, don't drink coffee an hour before you go to bed, all that like.
Oh yeah, no, don't do that. not ideal at all.
I like I don't drink coffee, but if I drank coffee, I would probably ask you why I shouldn't be drinking an hour before bedtime.
Yeah, I'd be like, I can imagine how this would go down. I'd essentially be in, you'd be there preparing your instant coffee, and I'd be like, Mohammed, why are you drinking this coffee? And you'd be like, well, actually, I read by random like Twitter longevity influencer that having out before you go to bed is like makes you live 20 years longer.
Exactly. But luckily Brian Johnson doesn't drink coffee. So I actually never drank coffee before, and it's one of those things where I just never thought it's a good idea to start doing. But yeah, speaking of like, well, eating too late to your bedtime, then the third pillar, I guess, of importance for your health is diet, right? And the first thing, before I go into anything, I want to just like get your perspective on like quote unquote fashionable diets. Like, you know, when you have all of a sudden everyone saying, oh, I'm doing keto, when I'm doing paleo, when I'm doing stuff like that. I very often like see like very funny pieces of research, like someone saying I'm doing paleo because that's how humans ate like thousands of years ago. And there's immediately in my YouTube recommendation a TED talk about this is not what humans ate like a couple of hundred years ago. It's all fat. This is like nonsense. It might be good for you to follow the diet, but it's not. So the contrast, the two arguments I wanted to lay here, I wanted to hear your opinion on. One of them is that these diets are often like arbitrary designed and like don't per se mean that much, and just like eating a balanced, healthy diet of what your intuition is healthy is probably good enough. So that's like one camp. The other camp is similar to an argument that I heard about from Cal Newport from like Deep Work and Digital Minimalism. He makes the argument about that when you have like a philosophy that's named and clear, you're very likely to actually stick to it. So if you say I'm just going to eat healthy, you have to make all these small decisions during your day about, oh, is this good or bad? But if you just say, I'm going to be vegan or I'm going to be keto or whatever, then you have like very clear rules and you have like very limited options, and then you end up being healthier. Not because the diet is good, but just because like psychologically, it's an easier thing to follow. So I wanted to just like hear your take on these two somewhat contradictory arguments.
So I think that, first of all, my perspective on diets is that from like a physiological point of view, every kind of rationale you hear about whether like a keto diet works for this reason because your body starts metabolizing these kind of macronutrients in this way or these kind of like chemicals in this way, I think is somewhat bogus. I think most of these diets don't come from very, very robust sources when we consider kind of the evidence base for them. It's more often than not some kind of like health influencer with some like made up qualification that's written some book with their like face beaming on the front of the book saying how this is, yeah.
Are you implying that the Tim Ferriss dieting tips are not legit?
What are the Tim Ferriss dieting tips?
I think he's a big pro of like slow carbs. Like he just says like avoid sugar and carbohydrates, just eat like legumes.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that like you can eat what you want, right? And I think slow carbs, yes, it's good to eat slow carbs because they are kind of less sugary, I suppose is the way to think about it. Like brown carbohydrates over white carbohydrates are less sugary in how they kind of impact your blood glucose. So you don't have this huge spike in kind of your blood glucose if you have something that's kind of like, I don't know, wholemeal bread, brown rice, brown pasta relative to those other carbohydrates. So basically, like my approach to food is just don't overcomplicate it. Just eat healthy stuff, right? Avoid sugar, avoid really fatty foods, and eat as much as you want, but eat the right stuff. So one thing that I suppose when I think about my food that I don't do is really, really try and, this is just a personal thing, I think for some people portion control can be useful, but I don't do portion control because rather than control my portions, I just eat enough of what I want as long as it's healthy, right? So if I really, really want to have like, I don't know, two chicken breasts, some rice, plus a bunch of veg, maybe some fruit as well, I'll eat that. That's fine for me. I don't think about the amount that I'm eating. I just make sure that it's the right stuff. And I suppose the final thing as well to kind of pick up on from what you said, and I really wanted to agree with, is that I think a lot of the reason that people find diets work, especially in the short term, is you have this philosophy around food or these set of rules that are very, very clear. So when you are going on some kind of like, I don't know, juice fast, forget how useful or kind of healthy that diet actually is. If you are following a set of rules that essentially restrict you to have a certain number of calories of a certain type of food and everything else is out of bounds, right? You can't have sweets, you can't have chocolate, you can only eat at these certain times, then you're just more likely to probably have a healthier diet for at least the short term. The problem with that is that often these things aren't sustainable in the long term. So yes, some people might find that certain types of diets work for them for like, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, a month, but 99% of people you don't find people that have been doing paleo for like 10 years, right? That just doesn't happen.
I guess like you find people have been vegan for 10 years, right? Or
yeah, but I think that's slightly different, right? And I think that the reason you probably stick to something like that more is that there is this probably more of a moralistic underpinning to, or an idealistic underpinning to what you're doing. So there's this stronger basis for it rather than, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds. Like that's a lot weaker than I really, really care about like reducing animal suffering.
Yeah, that does make sense. I still wonder, like, it's just like having clearly defined rules, even if there's no like ideological reason behind it, like a really big contributing factor into you sticking to something. Because from what you said and what I've read before, I think there was a study by Stanford somewhere where they got people to do like a low sugar diet and people to do a low fat diet, and then like had a distribution about the outcome, and it basically looked identical. Like your chances of losing weight if you do low sugar or low fat are practically the same. The really determining factor was whether you actually stick to the diet or not. Just pick something that's kind of healthy and just stick to it. And that's kind of like something I think about a lot. Don't overcomplicate it. Like, you know, like a lot of people look for these like 1% additional hacks, like what extra pill you can take, and just ignore the important stuff. Just like eating kind of healthy in general is like probably like gets you like 80% of the way there. You also mentioned like the joke about the juice diet, which brings me to like one of my favorite dieting subtopics, I guess, which is fasting and like whether it's like intermittent fasting or like caloric restrictions. And you're claiming, I think you claimed recently, that it's not as effective as I might think.
Yeah. So this is such an interesting point of discussion, I think. Fasting, caloric restriction, whatever you want to call it. So I think in kind of longevity subcultures, there is a real, real focus probably on fasting as being some kind of like meta habit for increasing longevity and well-being. And I would say that a lot of sources that I trust or that I respect, I think a lot of people, those sources, I know of people that do fast and they claim that that's better for longevity. The problem with this is that I think one of the things that I've learned over my medical degree that we learned at Oxford, it's kind of hammered into us from day one. It's just like, trust the evidence, question everything, be super, super skeptical when you hear these kind of claims. And so I did look kind of recently, did a search of the literature using Google Scholar, typed in like caloric restriction, fasting, longevity, and saw what came out. And basically the top hit there was a paper that came out about 2 years ago from a publication called Science, which is one of the foremost kind of science journals in the world, and basically did this systematic review of all of the literature on caloric restriction and fasting and the relationships that has with longevity. And the results that they found were that, yes, there is a load of evidence to say that this actually works in lab mice, but if you actually consider whether this works for human subjects, there's just no evidence to say that this does really work. And this is like a really common problem that we have in the whole field of longevity, which is that how do you ultimately test whether something makes someone live longer? It's
if your research budget is for 5 years.
Yeah, like this, even like something like a study that takes place over 5 years is too short a time horizon, right? So in an ideal sense, like, how would I set up this study? I would take 150 people where they didn't fast. I kind of got them to this between, I don't know, the ages of 30 and 40. And then I got 150 people that did intermittent fasting twice a week. I don't know, whatever regimen you want to focus on. And I would follow them through over the course of, I don't know, the rest of their lives, and then see who lives longer, right? Even then, it's not a perfect study, but it's kind of somewhat closer to finding out the true answer there. But you just can't do that. And what's like a real problem when we study these types of behaviors, in that we just really struggle to get really robust evidence to say that these things work. And basically, I think if you're really skeptical and you look at the actual strong evidence to support caloric restriction and fasting, yes, there's evidence in lab rats and mice, but there's just no really strong evidence to say this works in humans. Specifically related to like increasing lifespan. That's kind of the thing I want to mention there. Like, this is definitely relating to, yeah, it, for well-being. I think for a lot of people, they probably find that this does improve their well-being. But yeah, focusing specifically on longevity, I just don't see there being this robust evidence to underpin that.
Okay, so let's say I want to see, like, obviously, like, I can, in my lifetime, it's unlikely that we will have that evidence. Because unless people have been doing this research for like a long time. But let's say I have a hypothesis that fasting can be good. Like, what can I do on an individual basis? Like, what should I measure in my own body to see if like fasting helps with like certain biological markers? Like, what like should I, for example, fast for a couple of weeks and then see how my sleep is and like how my blood pressure is, how my ghrelin levels are and all that stuff? Or is just the fact I do it and I feel good after doing it, let's just pretend as if this is a great idea? Is that like just good enough for now?
Yeah, I think that's probably the it's probably good enough, right? Like, you mentioned a couple of things like biomarkers, blood biomarkers, physiological biomarkers. Assessing whether those levels change is probably super expensive. Like, you're gonna have to go to some private clinic, and like have a blood test done, get the results back.
How about I come up with a robot that makes the Brian Johnson diet, and then Brian Johnson would let me do his equipment?
Well, so you fly out to like San Francisco every week to have your blood taken by Brian Johnson?
I'll just go live with him, like, to make the robot.
Oh, really? And you're gonna make all of his food in your special food robot?
Exactly. And he can just sell it and then like advertise it and blah blah blah, and then I can just like live with him. And then how would I look after living with Brian Johnson for a year? Would I also look like an alien?
Has Brian Johnson agreed to this plan?
I don't know, but I think he'd be compelled if he sees my food robot skills.
Yeah, then you can go live with him. Yeah, and I don't know how that would work. I think you would very quickly get really, really bored of like having this like nutty pudding, which is one of his meals, and having that like every single day.
You think that I wouldn't enjoy eating veggies put in a blender every single morning for a year long?
Is that what like rocks your boat? Do you like that kind of stuff, Mo?
Like, probably I would hate my life in 3 days, but you know, I could do it.
Yeah. So basically, going back to your original point, how do you work out whether these like fasting improves your whatever? Like, what outcome do you care about here? Right. And I think this probably applies to anything when it comes to like health, well-being, practices that you can be doing to improve. Well, yeah. What is it you care about? Is it your well-being? Is it your fitness? So I think probably the main reason that a lot of people want to improve their health is probably, at least I think for me and a lot of the people that I interact with, it's probably more of a well-being thing. So if you really wanted to be kind of scientific or somewhat scientific about this process, what you might do is, I don't know, start a new habit and just one, do that for 2 weeks. Let's say you're doing intermittent fasting. So you make sure you stick to that for 2 weeks. Don't need to change anything else about your lifestyle, anything radically. And every day, then before you go to bed, you essentially have some kind of maybe chart on your bedroom wall or somewhere that you'll kind of pass by regularly. And you just mark down, like, how did I feel today? Was it a 6 out of 10, 9 out of 10? And see what happens over that period, right? So maybe do it before as well, like the 2 weeks before you start, so you have something to compare it against. And I think that's kind of like a more robust way to go about it than going down to like a private practice, having them take your blood, paying them like $200, like a test as well. So that's probably what I would do. But if you want to go fly to San Francisco and have Brian Johnson's team take your blood, then like, I'm not going to stop.
I wish that's an option, like just to try. Okay, but for now, I don't think it's an option. I don't have the food robot ready yet.
Coming to a supermarket near you, Steve.
Oh, well. Well, Seth, thank you very much for answering the questions you've answered like 5 times before, but now on a podcast format. Would you like to give me any closing remarks or closing pieces of advice or warnings, perhaps?
Warnings?
I assume it's mostly warnings.
No, now after having spoken about all these like incredible longevity tips and things that are going to improve your health, I kind of feel like some going downstairs and having some of that cake that you...
What? I'm not eating any cake. What are you talking about? It's such...
Yeah. Mohammed has actually been very good. I made some banana cake last week and it's essentially in the fridge. Anyway, I've given everyone the option to have it, and Mo has kind of consistently said no in favor of having it's like roasted veg and chicken instead. So
I feel so healthy right now. For now. we'll see how long this lasts. Okay, well then I'm gonna wrap up. I'm gonna switch to Arabic right now. I'm not sure how often you've heard me speak Arabic before, but
We've lived together for a year, and this is the first time I've heard you say Gareth.
Well, then you'll get a second chance now. بس أنا كده خلصت الكلام ومعرفش الحلقة دي ربنا هيجازيني عليها ولا ما نكررهاش تاني ولا نعمل ايه بالظبط. بس في كل الأحوال عايز أسمع رأيكم ايه، وشكرا لاستماعكم في الحلقة دي من بودكاست مطب 20، وإن شاء الله نشوفكم الأسبوع الجاي في حلقة جديدة، والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.